runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 430, ITIL in the Cloud, with guest Carol Moon. Recorded Thursday, July 9th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Carol Moon, who's been with Microsoft since 2000, started out in Microsoft Services, focused on service management, and then moved to what would become the Office 365 group, where he focused on service management strategy and engineering development, and was part of the team that put together the service management stack to go from Office 365 dedicated to 365 multi-tenant. Today, he is the senior architect for cloud service management. Now, that's an interesting role. So, are you actually consulting from within Microsoft to other organizations?
Yes, that's it's ITSM practice or service management practice. Mm-hmm. And so, we go help companies with all sorts of ITSM needs, whether it be monitoring or change management planning. And my role is to build that practice and help customers move to the cloud more quickly and without, you know, ideally without learning lessons the hard way.
Because clearly you've been part of the teams inside of Microsoft that have learned those lessons. Taking Office to the cloud, I mean, a product, a storied product with a big, long legacy and a long, tail to it up into the cloud, that's not a small effort. I think it's one of the hardest things Microsoft's probably ever done.
Yeah, we learned a lot of things the hard way. I think scale certainly will put a strain on your processes and tools as that sort of growth happens. And then, over time, you start moving workloads or different features and capabilities over to Azure. We run things on top of Azure as well. Mm-hmm. And so you learn a lot there as well. And so that's sort of how that played out, as we learned over the years as we were growing, where our processes, where our roles and responsibilities, where our tools needed to change. And then once we started moving things to Azure, I was able to look back and say, man, I sure am glad that we learned those lessons, because the same changes we ended up making for scale ended up being the same changes we needed to have made to run on top of federated service like Azure.
Right. And actually, that whole multi-tenancy, how do you support many, many customers without having to touch each of those customers individually?
Right.
You've written a couple of articles, which I've read that I really enjoyed, on the sort of idea of ITIL in the cloud. Because I also get a sense that folks feel like ITIL is kind of archaic, that this is the old way of IT service management, not the new way.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that viewpoint. What I'd say is things evolve. Mm-hmm. ITIL has done a great job for 30 plus years of writing and telling us that a wheel should be round. Yep. Best practices become best practices because through trial and error, the experience is what we call our mistakes. I think Oscar Wilde said that. And so, that sort of ITIL is great. It helps us learn that a change process should look like this.
Right.
And a configuration management process should be like this. Now, the cloud changes things and DevOps changes things in that those principles don't go away. You still need to approve changes. Or you still need to monitor. It's just the who does what and the speed and the automation aspects are different. And so whereas like with monitoring, I know that blog series you mentioned is around monitoring. I started with that because I think that's the easiest concept. All of us know how to, we've done monitoring historically. And so I wanted to write a series for the ITIL guys on, how that's going to change. And from there, we may end up doing more, but there's lots of other things like major incident management should change. Change and release management should change. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much just taking that monitoring example. It's not that we don't monitor like we used to. It's that, operations historically owned the whole thing. They own the tool and they own the rules. And really, if you step back from it, that's not the right way to do it anyway, because, you know, in the old days, I was owning SCOM, and then I had guys writing rules and tuning management packs for Exchange.
Right.
But my Exchange guys were never going to be as good at writing rules as the guys who were writing the Exchange store or writing the Exchange transport. And so that sort of separation of duties to enable DevOps and putting the accountability in the right place is really what it's all about. So I'd say the principles behind ITIL are still there, and the high level stuff, it's just now we need to make it real and more agile for the cloud. The principles are the same. It's the how you get there is likely to be quite a bit different.
Well, and I think we can deliver so much more these days. You know, you talk about this idea that we as a service organization should know about failure even before our customer knows, at the minimum, to be able to say, yes, we're on it. But I mean, I've had conversations with IT folks where their goal is to call the customer and let them know, hey, we saw you had a failure, even before the customer's been able to call them. And a lot of that, I think the cloud's really enabling for that.
That's right. It is. And I think that's one of the things you look at and go, well, if you've got even only 100 users using your app, and then you're an IT pro and you're in an IT shop and your company, and you've got an app that is supporting 100 users. If those 100 users use that application and they keep it open on their desktop from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., reality is they're going to catch it before you catch it, because to reduce false positives and whatnot, you're going to have some retries in there, even if you're checking every minute and you retry three times. But the idea is you want to get that thing. You want to know it as soon as they know it or slightly thereafter. And there's a period of time, sort of a bell curve type thing. You have a number of minutes before those calls start hitting your help desk. And in that window is when the ideal time to communicate would be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that idea. And certainly never be surprised by your customer.
That's right.
The customer should not be notifying you by the state of your system. That's what real monitoring looks like, is you're actually able to see where things are at. So is this just a tooling question? Is this, we have to tool differently because we're in the cloud?
No, I think it's not even just for us as a cloud service provider, the same concepts apply to if you're having a discussion about managing a service at immense scale. The same conversations apply if you're moving towards a DevOps model. The same conversations apply in a federated services model where, you know, basically the IT team of the future, and even of today for that matter, they're really becoming a broker of services where there's some applications that are SaaS provided. Some are still on premise. Some are on top of IaaS. Some are on top of PaaS, those sorts of things. And so the discussion isn't just about cloud. It's about the evolution of IT, I think. And so it's not just a tooling thing. It's more of a discussion and a value discussion and a how we approach it discussion. So taking that monitoring, again, I think that's one of the easier places to start. Historically, as an industry, we've thought about monitoring as tools. So you've got Microsoft's monitoring product. You've got, any number of tools out there. And we think, okay, we monitor because we've got these tools. And most of that monitoring is done from a failure mode approach. I'm monitoring that this disk doesn't fill up, or that the memory doesn't tip over, or that the motherboard's still working fine. That's a failure mode monitoring approach. That's important. Mm-hmm. But over the years, what we did is we gave ourselves sort of a warm, fuzzy blanket because we had a lot of noise. And the reality is, in most environments, monitoring is not triggering the major incident. The help desk is triggering the major incident. They page everybody, they race to the bridge, and then somebody opens up the monitoring console hoping to find the smoking gun.
Right. Looking for the critical.
That's not what you want. That's not what you want. What you want is capability monitoring, which is, what are the things that the users are going to call the help desk about? Let's monitor those. And so then in the industry, we said, okay, let's do synthetic. Synthetic transactions are great, but two things. One is you can't scale synthetics for, you know, as many as your users. So if you've got hundreds of millions of users on your service, or even that 100, you're probably not going to have 100 watcher nodes out there. And so you're limited by the location, by the availability, and by the number of your watcher nodes. So I'm not saying don't do synthetics. We should do synthetics, but we need to start changing the mindset to think, okay, every end user of this service is really a watcher node.
Sure.
How can I capture information on the back end in a way that's going to let me look at what normal looks like, and to say, okay, absence of data is also data. So if I have 100 connected users at, right now, and in 5 minutes that's 98, that's not a big deal. But if I've got 100 right now and in 5 minutes time there's 25, something's up.
Something's
and
going
I can
on.
Alert. And yeah. So there's good opportunities there just to change the way we think about monitoring.
This still sounds like we've got better tooling today. It's very practical, and I'm throwing a dev hat on here now, for me to instrument every client and to be collecting that data. That used to be much harder than it is today. There's such good tools now for me to have essentially real-time instrumentation of every client.
That's right. And that's a big data challenge, of course, with that. And there's a cost associated with that. And even there's some clever things, some clever best practices that I'll cover in future posts in that blog series mm-hmm. where, yeah, and actually I was writing some of that content yesterday on an airplane. And, one of the things is people saying, oh, I can't do that. I've got too many users, or I can't afford the data, or I don't have an ability to do that. You can roll up that data. So you don't necessarily have to, I don't have to be able to say Richard's connection had this.
Right.
In the ideal state, I'll do that. And that's great for root cause analysis and trending and all that, and to help delight you as an individual end user. But what if I just had a perf counter that said, okay, how many connected active users do I have right now?
Yeah.
And I sample that every minute, you know? That completely changes the game, because you've got an opportunity to now monitor that perf counter and look for sudden change. Don't set some, if it's less than 80 alert, because on the weekends, it's going to be less than
sure.
80 on that, on that 100 user example. Set it for sudden change. If it drops 50% in 5 minutes, then give me an alert, those sorts of things. And that really, that criteria needs to be on the developer. So historically, what would happen is, devs, they know the application. They know if the application itself knows if it's healthy or not. And they're writing that stuff to logs. If there's a bridge or incident, they get on the phone, they run a couple of commands to troubleshoot, they open up logs, and here's the issue. That's just not codified in a way today that operations can grab it and act on it. And so that's part of that, what I was saying. It's just about changing the way we think about it to have a discussion. And the other thing that has historically been the case is you'll have the app teams logging the data, but then in your monitoring tool, we've got the ops guys over here trying to figure out, how do I read that log in real time? How do I then alert on this situation? And the next upgrade, the app guys go change the pattern that they're writing to the app log. So now all of a sudden your monitoring is broken. And so it's really about taking that sort of middle ground where it's clear the developer should be the one quantifying what's broken and logging that information. It's clear that the monitoring hub, if you will, should be the ones picking it up, paging people, so that there's, every app team's not paging their own people. But that middle ground is the piece that historically has lived with ops. That's the wrong place. It needs to be part of the code. It should be part of how that application does business. And then the operations aspects are about running world-class sort of monitoring platform to pick that information up.
There's a pretty powerful philosophical conversation around here around the SCOMs, New Relics, AppDynamics, all of these external instrumentation packages, so that I don't have to feed requirements to development for how I want to see monitoring on an app. I mean, where do you fall on, can third-party products do this for us?
Third-party products play a part of the answer to mm-hmm. it, but it's not the only answer. There's no one silver bullet tool, and I don't think there ever will be, because look at how many tools have been in the industry, over the last 20 years of monitoring client server apps. There's not yet a single perfect tool, and then I don't think there will be, because what needs to happen, yes, have those tools, get the data, let them, they all play a part for application development, trending, and looking for opportunities to optimize function calls and that sort of stuff. That data is important, but really what's been missing is the conversation to go, what is important? What do I need to monitor? What is the cleverest way, least cost, most effective, that sort of thing. What is the cleverest way for every one of these scenarios that I'm going to be able to be successful monitoring? Sometimes that's going to be a third-party tool. Sometimes it's going to be creating a new custom perf counter on your app
right. In
Azure. Sometimes it's going to be dropping an event, right? It's having those discussions, starting with the capabilities. What are the capabilities that, again, those users are going to call the help desk for? Let's be clever and monitor those. And then the other piece is, for the failure modes that matter, what are the 10 things I would – what are the 10 things that if they happen, I want you as a developer to wake me up.
Right.
And not the old way, which is, okay, I feel better because I've got 100 rules that are firing every 5 minutes and I've got a lot of noise. Noise gives me a sense of comfort. But the reality is there are an infinite number of failure modes. We can't predict them all. And so why does having 100 rules make me feel better than 10? It shouldn't. If I've got 10 and that's the right number, awesome. Let's go with it.
Well, this is the same problem we have setting up SCOM, right? Like, it takes a long time to turn down the noise level without turning down the important, so that you can actually see the relevant information. Although, again, that's not very app-centric. Although, if you're going to go build your own perf counters, you can make it a little more app-centric.
Right. And SCOM definitely plays a part, or any, you know, you name the tool, it plays a part. The key is, I think, you know, historically, we've started with everything turned on, and then we tune down.
Yeah.
I think the better approach here in the new world is to start with everything turned off and to tune up.
Right.
You know, let's make sure we add the great monitors that development has helped us define. Even if ops are the one that writes them, it's not a who writes the code or who writes the script thing so much as it is, you know, development should be the ones, they know the app better than anybody else. They should be the ones quantifying what the rules are. Is the app healthy? That sort of thing. And then if they do it right, they can work with ops in a way that, you know, then that's the topic of that blog series, sort of from the ops perspective. How does ops enable themselves to add value back to the app dev teams, and how do they help enable this conversation? Because a lot of teams in IT today are worried. They're like, with this cloud and DevOps, what do I do in the future? The reality is, if the ops teams play it right, they get rid of the work nobody wants to do, like patching servers on a Saturday.
Yep.
Or being accountable for monitoring rules when they don't know the application. They get rid of that, and they keep the stuff that matters and actually become more important to the business. Because if they're in an IT organization, if there are 10 app teams, for every app team to share best practices with every other app team, every app team's got to talk to nine people.
Yeah, it's the N+1 problem.
But if we do a hub and spoke model, every app team's talking to one. So who sits at the center? It should be what's historically been called operations. But operations, like I mentioned in the blog series, they need to evolve as well. It's
Absolutely.
Not, rote activity anymore. It's just like a dev team.
And let me interrupt you there for just a moment, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of configuration drift. Configuration drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. Now, I love the idea of ops coming with requirements for an app to dev. Like, to me, that's a day to have a party when they care enough about an app and want enough insight to an app that they need that domain knowledge from the developer about what this app does and what's important in it. But now you need that visualization. How are you going to present to me that your app's in trouble? What numbers are good? What numbers are bad? Is that really the interface point of how do I provide a visualization for that? Because I would think a dev just goes, I'll write you a dashboard, but that's just another place to look.
Right. Yeah. And if we have that is the goal, is to have dev quantify those, but with ops drive helping with that discussion, mm-hmm. What's historically been known as ops. Again, I'm not making a play for ops. What I'm saying is there is a function that needs to evolve within every IT organization and in the industry of this central hub idea, monitoring hub being one of them, because it avoids duplication effort. It helps us do it the right way. And so enabling those conversations and teaching the devs how to think about monitoring, how to instrument their apps, how to, you know, if they want to bring in a third party tool, great. Because the app guys, if we do it right and they're accountable for whether we miss things with monitoring, the central hub is accountable for, okay, they logged the event, but I didn't page them. That's on me. But the dev guy, if he didn't capture the failure mode, that's on him.
Right.
Sort of a shared accountability there. And so what you want is virtuous cycle of the hub and the development teams working together and evolving it together. And so that dashboard then, you know, the data, if they're logging the data in the right way, great. Write your own report. That's fine. But maybe there's a central, hub function where we're enabling all of these reports and we're enabling the devs to get data out of that pipeline. So they're just writing data into a bus somewhere that then we've got a analytics interface that they can write. And so the idea there is that hub is providing business value to the app teams so that they can focus on capturing market share, reducing costs for their business, because that's what devs are supposed to do.
Sure.
And then these are the things that would be the duplication of effort, a high risk, to say, we're going to provide value back to you. We're our own app team, that hub, we're an app team, and we provide value back to these other app teams. And we treat ourselves the same way, and we measure ourselves. So think about monitoring. Historically, we've not, as ops or that central hub, we've not thought of ourselves that way. You know, we're not even measuring in most cases. Okay, you dropped an event in the event log. It took 5 minutes for that to get to the monitoring tool, and it took another 6 minutes for me to ticket. I just ate 11 minutes of your 44-minute SLA for the month. That's unacceptable.
Right.
So the hub needs to measure that stuff and up their game.
This idea of digitally manifesting an SLA, it's just a really hard problem. You know, we've got our sales guys writing these contracts for what our SLA requirements are going to be, but how do you know you're meeting them? And, you know, how close you are getting to, well, you know, what was our 5 nines of uptime this month? Like that's, I've never found a simple way to get that done.
Well, I do think with big data and big compute, there are new opportunities. Like we were talking about a little bit ago, even down, I mean, really the discussion, the SLA, there's a great article that was written. I wish I'd written it on CIO magazine recently about the death of an SLA and why I like that. Article isn't so much the idea of SLAs dying. It's just the idea of, you know, as an application, you're sitting on top of all sorts of infrastructure, even if you're all within your own internal company, holding your network team to an SLA.
Right.
Whether they hit it or not, isn't going to make you whole. So if the power company goes out and, you know, all the stuff in my refrigerator goes bad, even if I had an SLA with a power company, it's not going to bring my groceries back.
Yes.
You know, it's not going to do that. And so, the idea there is we've got to think about it differently. And so what's been missing, and I tagged this back to the ISIL thing, it's had guidance for 30 years about you need to quantify the SLAs or your targets or your KPI around what are the right things to measure.
Right.
So is it that the back end was up 99.9% of the time? Is that what we really need? Or is it that out of our 100 users for this sample app, all of them were connected when they tried to connect, they were successful connecting, whether they were on an airplane or whatever, they were successful doing what they tried to do 90 whatever percent of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did those things, was it performant some percentage of the time, right? It's changing those discussions to say, we've been in a box as an industry because we didn't have big data and we didn't have big compute. And so we've always focused on what we could measure, which is the back end. But maybe it's time to start having the conversations we've always needed, which is, what do I really need to measure? And big data and big compute opens up that opportunity for us.
Yeah, are we actually at the place now where we can measure the productivity of our users?
Right, you could. Things like, could you make an argument that how many emails I send a day is a measure of my productivity? Or if I log on and read or send my first email at 8 a.m. and send my last at 5 p.m., is that less productive than somebody who maybe is a heavy mobile email user and read his first email at 3 a.m., sent his last one at 11 p.m., which one of those users is more productive?
Yeah.
Right? That's the sort of data that I think is game-changing. In fact, even the Office 365 guys, my old team, announced some of that, some awesome user-level reporting at Ignite. If you haven't seen it, it would be worthwhile to take a look at that blog. Really, really good stuff coming to open up scenarios like that for customers.
Well, it's very powerful to have that conversation of what we mean by productivity in this organization or with this particular application. Like, that's a really interesting idea. And then being able to measure that effectively in real time.
You bring it up a great point. I mean, because one of the key things, and I haven't blogged on it yet, is every IT organization out there needs to change and evolve to being a deliverer of business value.
So right.
what business are we in? If we're in the business of making chocolate, we need to focus our IT efforts on making better chocolate, not on the technology. What we've always focused on as an IT team or as an IT group of people in the industry is on running servers and running services. It needs to be more to that business value aspect. And I think the cloud absolutely enables that.
And that speaks to this whole idea of our metrics. Our metrics as an IT organization aren't going to end up being business metrics anyway. That turns out to be the only thing that actually matters.
Big data and big compute absolutely open up those things. It's an exciting time to be an IT guy, exciting time to be an ops guy. I always tell people it's just the definition of what used to be ops needs to evolve.
Well, and, you know, we speak of being a service organization to keep this whole thing running. It's nice to actually equate that to the dollars and cents of the business. I almost feel like as tech people, we've avoided owning our actual ROI. We rarely get down to the dollars and cents of the business. We keep talking about requests per second and percentage uptime rather than this is how much money we got per customer. This is how much it costs to do per transaction in dollars and cents.
That's right. And for how many, for every 10 users to the website, visits to the website, we sold this many products.
Right.
And this is the revenue we drove. Those sorts of things are really, really where it's at. And the cloud, you know, cloud absolutely gives us an opportunity to allow businesses to focus, you know, those IT organizations to capture that value. And that's what developers and DevOps is all about, right? It's how do I enable the dev to go faster and do, you know, have more automation for ops and to move faster. And, but there is risk to that. It's never a bad thing, but it's an and, not an or. The risk there is you have that duplication of effort. So if every application team, if there are those 10 app teams in a company, if everyone's writing their own dashboards, like you said, and everyone's writing their own page me scripts, there's duplication there.
Sure.
And then there's also risk. You know, what happens if every team's got their own page me script and that guy that they're paging is out of coverage? What do you do? Who's backing that thing up? And so I think it's an and, not an or. Whereas if you drew a little pie graph within, like, took monitoring and all of these 10 app teams and drew a little pie graph, there's some sliver of that pie that's redundant.
Yeah.
So how do we then pull that out and hubitize it, for lack of a better word, put it in a hub function that can also still be an app team, but to put it in a hub function so that it's, you know, it's driven to the quality it needs to be. Maybe as a central ops guy in the old days, I got, you know, my budget was $5 a month for monitoring. And if every app team is spending $5 a month here and I've got 10 teams, now I've got $50 of potential. That's, you know, I could say, okay, give me 20 of that and I'll run the world-class service for you for monitoring. And I'm still giving the business back $30. It's an easy discussion. And it's actually a better place for ops.
Sure. But I also get this idea that only from monitoring do we actually see the value of the app. Like if we're really going to get into this value add loop where we know that what we're doing is benefiting the business, monitoring becomes essential. It's because you're never going to know you're going to hit the real goalposts. You know, we've been angry with developers for a long time that when we shipped software to operations for deployment, that was the FET goalpost. All right. Well, okay. We won't have the party until after you deploy it. Well, that's not the real goalpost either. The real goalpost is when the customer uses it, they get a benefit and we get a benefit from it. Like that's maybe a couple of weeks further down the road when you actually see these features being used and making us money. That's a much more challenging monitoring prospect.
You're right. And, you know, monitoring is just one. I harp on that one a lot because it's sort of easy and not so political, but change and release is another great example. You know, DevOps, we're moving fast and the ops guys are running around with governance picket signs in the hallways. And, you know, what do you do there? And, well, the way we've always done change and release for mission critical services is you've got a dev environment, you've got a test, you've got a pre-production, you've got a production environment, and they're really big toll gates because rolling back is really risky.
Right.
But with the cloud, you open up this new opportunity to go, guys, don't block progress. We want progress because it's going to let our business capture market value. But what we want is, look, why couldn't I, you know, I've got my production environment, all the traffic's going there. I can quickly spin up a second. I can upgrade the second and I just do a VIP swap. Now all my traffic's going to the other node, fail back. Guess what? It's a two minute thing where I just flip the traffic back. The rigor of ITIL is still there. The how we accomplish it is very, very different, or how we can accomplish it should be very, very different to enable the devs to move fast while at the same time continuing to reduce that risk and maintain the security. So change and release is a big one. Major incidents, a big one. You know, it seems so simple. Everybody's got a great major incident process.
Sure.
But really, do they? When it comes to, you know, being that broker of services, if I've moved an app to Azure and you know, on the east two is where my Azure SQL is, and it's active passive to west. But then app two comes on, and it's primary in the west, and it's secondary in the east, and it's in a separate subscription. You know, and we post something that says east two SQL Azure is impacted. Some poor ops guy is going to see that, or some developer is going to see that, and everybody, you don't want them trying to figure out in real time, okay, what apps depend on this thing? And did they fail over the way they're supposed to fail over? Who do I need to call? Who do I need to ticket to? You know, that's a mess. And so getting that major incident process squared away is really, really important. It's also a great opportunity because as things are moving, everybody's so worried about moving so fast. a great major incident process will cover up all kinds of process problems, right? Because it's not always the fact that you had an incident, it's how you respond to it.
Sure.
So the incident's bad enough, but if you blow it with your major incident process, you've made it a ton worse.
Yeah, don't make the hole deeper. But it still feels to me like it starts with monitoring. Like you're talking about, let's get better at change and release. But the only way I know I'm actually better is that I have good enough monitor to show if we're failing, if that new feature is working, is it providing value? Like this seems to be the thing. Start with great monitoring. And then when these other things come down the pipe, you actually know that you're doing it well or not.
Yep. And that's the order that we recommend. You know, when I go work with customers, to your first question about working with customers in this role, that's what I tell them. First, get your monitoring right. Well, first map your service. You need to understand what are the capabilities? How is it configured? Does it depend on, you know, if you're on top of Azure, are you using Azure SQL, Redis Cache? What are the components that you need to worry about? Second comes monitoring. Once you map the service, third comes major incident because, you know, the stuff's going to happen one either on your side or our side and you need to be able to handle it. Next becomes the release and change aspects. From there, it's problem, not fluffy problem management, but real, let's get data and let's learn and improve and be, you know, get that virtuous cycle going of improvement. And then from there, it's normal incident and service desk. If you get those pieces right, you're going to be in pretty good shape. Everything else is like you said, as it comes along, things like capacity management, things like availability reporting, all of that stuff can come. But the priority zero stuff is that list I just explained.
For sure. Yeah. And it really interesting that you can't do preventative work until you have all this infrastructure in place that happens to benefit crisis work as well. I've also found lots of organizations that are addicted to the crisis and preventative work takes those crises away, which makes them sad.
Right. And a lot of people have great trending tools. Back to your point about third party tools and first party tools, tons of tools. How many reports from those tools are actually driving measurable results?
Right.
So if I make this code change, it's going to get rid of this many alerts and this many times the developer gets paged and woken up at night. Or if I make this code change, it's going to resolve, 32 lost orders from our website over the last month, that kind of thing.
Right. Well, yeah, there's an interesting problem there. If you start with this instrumentation of the feature set of your app, but how do you actually convert that into this business metrics? How do we get from uptime on a service to dollars per customer or sales, sales per visitor, that kind of thing? Like those are much, that transformation, that's hard.
It is. That idea of the productivity and the true business value. But I mean, it's doable. And I think, you know, a big step for us, like I mentioned, was the announcements at Ignite, some of the new reporting coming and lots more to come from there. But there's, you know, it's a great, great opportunity with being able to, at least for Office 365 for customers to start being able to see that data.
Absolutely. Carol, really fun to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time here. It's worth reading these articles and digging deeper.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.